Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of November 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear an extended interview with Kim Kidwell. She's the brand new dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. And originally, she's from Danville. You want to stick around for that one. I'll also tell you about how to get your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference, and we'll check in with Don Day, too, of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Well, at this hour, I'm traveling towards the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. We'll talk to you from there tomorrow and for the rest of the week. Though, as I looked at the marketplace, and we've already had a quick discussion with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities about this, it appears that it was a really good day in Chicago. More on the reasons why as we make our way through this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. A quick reminder that you should visit our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find not only our agricultural programming, but a link to the Farm Assets Conference. Now, let me make a plea right now for you to get online and buy those tickets today. We need to know within about a week how many of you will be there. It's farmassetsconference.com, so don't delay. This is just $30, and it will be a really good day in Normal, Illinois. This is the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. The $30 that you'll be putting into the kitty will buy your ticket and the meal for the day, the coffee breaks, and the parking's free too. And it's a fantastic day that will include six of our regular on-air analysts. Mike Zuzulo, Ellen Dearden will be with us, Aaron Curtis and Greg Johnson, along with a couple of specialists that we're bringing in, Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group, and from the Van Trump Report, Kevin Van Trump. That's the Farm Assets Conference. Don't delay. Get your tickets right now. FarmAssetsConference.com or just go to willag.org if you've already got that bookmarked. And you'll find a link to the Farm Assets Conference and all the details. It comes up the 22nd of November.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let me take a moment now to thank you for listening to our ag programming. Thank you. I mean it. Really, thank you for listening to the programming. And just as a reminder, here's what you hear each and every business day. We start at 8:55 a.m. with the opening market report, including Aaron Curtis, Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, Ellen Dearden, and Bill Mayer. And then an update at 10:58 a.m. with five other voices, Joe Vaklovic, Greg Ginder, Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Steve Georgie, followed up at 12:58 each and every business day with Sue Martin, and then, of course, the closing market report, including our analysts Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, and Mike Zuzulo. And we wrap up each week by recording Commodity Week on Thursday evening. You can hear it at willag.org that night or on Friday afternoon at 2:36. Oh, and don't forget that we also have a whole series of regularly scheduled analysts during the closing market report for weather. Those include meteorologist on Monday, Mark Russo, Tuesday, Don Day, Wednesday, Drew Lerner, Thursday, Mike Tenora, and on Friday afternoon, both Jim Angel and Eric Snodgrass. WillAg.org. We think it's one of the most comprehensive places that you can find information about markets and weather and agricultural news. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much for listening.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for getting your tickets already for the Farm Assets Conference. If you haven't gotten them, willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. Buy your tickets today. We're just a couple of weeks away and kind of need to know that you're going to come. So don't wait any longer. Get it done at farmassetsconference.com, just $30. Now let's talk about the marketplace. Boy, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Though I'm traveling right now towards NAFB, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. When we talked at about 1:45 Central Time, the markets were up 6 to 7 cents in corn and 16 to 17 cents in soybeans. Why was that the case?
Well, you know, a couple of good things happened here. We had some meal demand, the Philippine sale yesterday and Dominican Republic today in the meal. And then, of course, the palm oil hit new highs on its move overnight. And that's kept the bean oil jumping. And the funds have been big buyers. They started in the bean oil, then over in the meal, and then they started in the beans and in the corn and have continued to buy. There does seem to be some relief in the stock market also. The Dow and the S&Ps are up sharply here as we talk, with the idea that it looks a little bit more like a Clinton win, and that's taking the markets on up a little more today as far as the financials on the outside.
In the market broadly, I think, believing that a Trump presidency would be far more protectionistic than a Clinton presidency, and we won't delve any deeper into that. However, it's clearly saying what the market would really like to happen for the day. Now, the other thing is that we have two important events that are coming the rest of the week. So election today, WASDE numbers tomorrow, and then that Malaysian palm oil stocks number is out on Thursday, and it's looking more important all the time.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one. We're going to see that that's probably a lot shorter than what it is, and that is keeping our demand for bean oil very strong. You know, as we look just at the 100-day moving average in Jan beans, it's at 10.03, and now while we're trading right now, we're at 10.14 and three quarters. So we went through that 100-day moving average, and it is a technical move today more so than a fundamental one. You know, the other talk we've had that the La Nina is sort of dying down in South America. And the corn basis, the ethanol plants has sort of picked up here in the last week, too, as farmers are finishing up where they're paying a little bit more for that.
What do you predict between now and Thanksgiving?
Now and Thanksgiving. Well, it looks like we'll probably continue to see a little basis tightening to keep things moving because, by the end of this week or beginning next, we're going to be pretty well done with harvest. Corn harvest was 86% done through Sunday, beans 93% done. So basically we're winding up and we look for a little post-harvest rally to happen that way.
Given that the grains are higher, are you surprised that the livestock futures are higher as well today?
It sort of am. I mean, but they beat up the livestock so bad over the last couple of months, it's unbelievable. But it is sort of funny to see feedstocks up and meat up the same day because you generally don't see the feeder cattle up when corn's up like this.
Hey, Wayne, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Not in the office at this point, traveling to Kansas City this afternoon for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. I'll come to you from there tomorrow and Thursday and Friday. Just a quick reminder that tomorrow is USDA Report Day, so check out our website at willag.org at 11 a.m. or my Twitter account at Commodity Week, and I'll post all of those numbers from the WASDE and crop production reports directly to those two places as quickly as I can get them up. That's tomorrow at 11 o'clock. It's Wednesday, November the 9th for the USDA crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Also, while you're on the website at willag.org, hit the link to farmassetsconference.com and get your tickets purchased today. They're just $30. And you can find all the details of the event less than 2 weeks away now. So if you're going to come, you need to get it done right now at farmassetsconference.com.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. The College of ACES, the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, has a brand new dean. Her name is Kim Kidwell, and she hails originally from Danville, Illinois, though she spent quite a little bit of time in Washington at Washington State University. She joined me in studio yesterday afternoon, and I talked to her a little bit about her background. We started with a funny little question. She's a wheat breeder, and I wanted to know why it was that she named one of her varieties of spring wheat Babe.
Oh, gosh, that's such a great story. I named lots of my wheat varieties after people that I love, and I was going to name one after my mom. And she and my dad got in a little bit of a to-do about it, you know. Well, why don't you name one after your dad? Well, you should name one after your mom. You should name one after your dad. And my mom and dad called each other Babe for years and years and years and years. And so I actually named that wheat variety Babe after my mom and dad.
Okay, so people will know from here, especially that are listening to the radio station at WLL, they may very well know your mom and dad in Danville, is that right?
They might, yeah. My mom's name is Jan Kidwell, and my dad passed away about 12 years ago, but his name was Chuck or Dick Kidwell, depending on who you were talking to and what area he was hanging out in the moment.
How did you decide to become a wheat breeder?
Oh, you know, another funny story just about how life opens up and evolves. I didn't even know what a wheat breeder was when I was in school. And when I came to University of Illinois, I wanted to be in broadcast journalism, actually. So I aspired to be a NFL football broadcaster. That was my goal. And, you know, as life has it, I got interested in other things. But I took a general ed class from a professor in botany. It was John Lonnon, Dr. John Lonnon, who was the guy that resurrected Super Sweet. You know, he got the Super Sweet, Illini Super Sweet corn going. And so he gave a lecture in this general ed class that was just vibrant. And I remember I was sitting up in the back of the room. It was like 300 people in the room. And I thought, boy, I want to like my job as much as that guy likes his job. He's just on fire, and he's talking about corn. So I went down and talked to him after class, and he invited me to come over and see his research lab and talk a little bit about what he does. And I started working with him as an undergrad researcher at that point in time. And I worked with Dr. Lonnon and his wife, Susan Gabalon, for 3 years. And they got me hooked on plant genetics, and it became my passionate love. And so that's how I ended up being a wheat breeder.
You've released 20 varieties?
About that, probably a little more than that now. You know, the thing about being a breeder, that legacy lives on for a long, long, long time. So I had a very productive program. I worked with lots of farmers. And so when I went to Washington State, I honestly didn't know anything about wheat. I had worked with corn at University of Illinois, and all my graduate work at Wisconsin was on alfalfa. So the job market was pretty bad at that point in time. And I was just kind of practicing interviewing. So WSU called and said, hey, we want you to apply for this job. And I'm like, I don't know anything about wheat. Why would they want me to apply for that job? So I decided, well, I haven't interviewed much, so maybe I'll go practice. And I was very relaxed. So I showed up out there, and I just fell in love with the people and the farmers. And what was so great about that program was it was very much farmer relevant. So when they hired me, they knew I didn't know much about wheat, but they knew I had a good background in genetics and plant breeding. And so I traveled the whole eastern half of the state with farmers for about the first 6 months that I was there. And they just told me all the problems they were having and what they really wanted their wheat breeder to do. And I custom designed that program with their interest in mind. And it revolutionized what we were doing in spring wheat there, and was the smartest decision I ever made, just was to ask what they needed. And it was really helpful. So the program was really productive. And one of my wheat varieties is still the number one spring wheat variety in the Pacific Northwest right now. And it's been in that position for about 10 years.
Which variety is it?
That's Louise.
Nice. What's it named after?
My niece. Yeah. I always called her Louise when she was a little girl. So it was her nickname. And I named that one after her.
You got to learn about Hessian flies and stripe rust and other things, I guess.
Yeah. You know, the beauty of being a wheat breeder is your last success is your next target. And Mother Nature is who you battle every day. So there's always something to do.
How do you want to bring that into the College of Aces?
You know, the relevance is the part that I really love and want to have part of my platform as dean. You know, I think the reason to work in a land-grant university is that you want to do things that matter to people. We're the college that does the science that's highly visible in our everyday lives, be it in food, be it in, you know, some of the things we do with families and children, be it with product development and food science and the economic thread that kind of underpins everything. People are highly associated with what we do, and so we need to tell that story a little bit better. You know, the research that we do really matters to society. The students that we train are the next change agents in disciplines that really mean a lot to everyday life and quality of life of people. So that's always been my theme. You know, I loved being a wheat breeder because I knew what was happening with the outcome of those efforts. So I'd see them in farmers' fields, be they in amazing shape or train wrecks. You know, we had some feast or famine experiences with wheat breeding, and I love that it was relevant. You know, I never wondered why I went to work every day. You know, I went to work to make a difference, and I think that's what this college does, and I really want to feature that and highlight that as we move forward.
We've done research. Let's talk about teaching. You've won more than a few awards for teaching, I made note. You must be an excellent prof.
Well, you know, I hope so. That's always the goal. You know, I kind of embodied John Lonnon when I went into the classroom, and I knew that it made a difference how I showed up for students. And so I've always loved using an interactive model, not so much a didactic model where you just talk at students and expect them to regurgitate stuff. So my classes are really interactive, and I like students to work on projects that are kind of real so they can translate the content we're trying to teach them to something that they can remember and something that's meaningful. So I think there's no better honor in academia than to pass the torch to the next generation of experts in our fields. You know, we're all about building legacy and building pipeline. And, you know, for me personally, if I hadn't met John Lonnon, I really don't know where my life would have gone. You know, he was an inspiration and a role model and a mentor to me, and he supported me beyond any measure. You know, he believed in me when I didn't even believe in myself. And I think sometimes you just need somebody to advocate for you. Sometimes students just need to know that they can do it. And I feel like, you know, that's been part of my role is to have high expectations of what they can do and then support them in getting there. So I frankly, for me, if I didn't have to teach, I don't think I would have gone into academia. It's what I really wanted to do. I was pretty good at it when I was a grad student. And so I thought, well, if people that love to do it should do it. So I think I'll go into academia and give it a go and see what happens.
Tell me about the 205 class.
HD 205. It was just a crazy story. You know, I had been at WSU for a few years, and I realized right away when I took my faculty position that, you know, I was well trained in science. What I wasn't trained in was dealing with people, and I think it's something that we don't do a good job of in general in academia. And so I did some life skill enhancement work in the private sector, and I came out of that training, realized that with a little bit of coaching, the relationships that I built with people would have been different. You know, I think we go on automatic pilot when we're trying to build a relationship with people, and there's some things you can learn and some tools you can use that just makes that better, especially around navigating conflict and differences and building consensus and, you know, just appreciating different types of personalities. So when I came out of the training, I thought, well, you know, I think we should do something for graduate students along these lines because, you know, the people part of the business is the harder part. The science actually is the easier part in some ways. And so I went back to WSU and I was pretty excited about developing a grad level communications course.
Is this related to the Center for Transformational Learning and Leadership?
It is. It built right out of that. So what happened was human development lost an instructor. They had a general ed communications course that needed to be taught. The Associate Dean of Academic Programs at that time knew that I wanted to teach a grad course on interpersonal communications, and she called me and said, hey, will you do this at the undergrad level? And I said, sure. So I worked with a life coach from the private sector to build HD 205, and it immediately was a hit. It was kind of amazing. Students really love to be in a place of learning conscious communication skills and practicing it in an interactive environment. So we did a lot of community service projects where they learned how to work with groups of 25 people to do different types of service learning projects. And the goal there was for them to organize in a way they got a lot of things done. And they learned a lot about accountability and about navigating conflict and dealing with personal challenges and being accountable for that and acknowledging people. So that class really still is one of the most popular classes on campus. And it took off so big that we had to hire more instructors to do it. And I trained most of them. And it rolled into, from that undergrad class, we developed some workshops that we did for adult learners, which rolled into an online title leadership certificate program that we launched a couple years ago. And then last year, we just finally created a graduate level online course that I hope to teach here, actually, in about a year. But from that, the work was so successful that we developed a center there, the Center for Transformational Learning and Leadership, which is all about just trying to create opportunities for people in an interactive environment to learn how to be better communicators and how to be better stewards of a relationship with people to improve their results. So it was an amazing journey that just started from me thinking, you know, we should teach students how to do this when they're in school, when their stakes are low. So when they get out in the world, they have a better chance of developing good relationships with people and being effective communicators.
It is one of the land-grant missions as well, that engagement portion here in the college and across the whole of the United States. It's referred to as extension. How do you see its role?
You know, extension is so important, and there's a national crisis in extension. There's no doubt about it. You know, I think some of the funding concerns that have happened here or have happened all over the land-grant system, you know, I consider the extension folks to be the ultimate translators. You know, they're embedded in communities, and they have more direct contact with most of the citizens of the state compared to, you know, people that are centralized even in Champaign-Urbana. So to figure out how we catalyze that so that really they become the face and the voice of the college is really important to me. Some of the contacts that we have with future students happen firsthand with some of our extension personnel. The dissemination of our research work can happen there. So I know the state's been through a lot, and there's been a lot of concern about what a 21st century extension program looks like. But I had a chance to talk with the chancellor about this, and one of the best advantages for us with him is that he understands what extension is, and it means something to him. It was a big part of his career. It was a big part of my career as well. So I'm excited about what we might do together, but I do consider that to be a vital piece of what a land grant is, because that translation is really what makes us mission relevant. So we'll definitely be figuring out how to do a good job of making that extension network vibrant.
Kim Kidwell is the new dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. If you'd like to meet and talk with Kim Kidwell, you can do that on the 22nd day of November at the Farm Assets Conference. She'll be there for the duration, along with a whole series of other University of Illinois folks, like George Zappar, the Director of Extension here in the state, along with Jonathan Kappas and Gary Schnicki, Agricultural Economics Specialist, one on policy, one on crop insurance, and then the Bullock brothers, one crop scientist and one ag economist, and they'll all be on hand for the afternoon, along with a whole bunch of other folks. Should be a really good day. You can see all the details at farmassetsconference.com. This is the 22nd day of November, the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving in Normal, Illinois, at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. One of the important things that will be happening for that day is a farm bill listening session, your opportunity to exercise a different kind of civic duty than voting. This part kind of a grassroots policy session where some of the farm organizations in the state will be gathering up information and opinions from you about the policies that impact agriculture. You don't want to miss it, and you want to be involved, so get yourself registered today at farmassetsconference.com.
It's National Harvey Wallbanger Day. It's also St. Hesterus, Patron of Cattle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Elijah Craig, according to some historians, distilled the first bourbon whiskey from corn in Bourbon County, Kentucky. What's not in dispute is that Craig founded a distillery as well as building Kentucky's first cloth manufacturing mill, its first paper mill, and its first mill for manufacturing rope from hemp. In 1880, Edwin Drake died, an American driller. He discovered the first productive oil well near Titusville, Pennsylvania, that launched the modern U.S. petroleum industry. He struck oil at a depth of 69 feet on August 27th of 1859. Drake used an old steam engine to power the drill. Ironically, Drake died in poverty after years of crippling illnesses. In 1910, a patent for the first electric insect zapper was issued to William H. Frost of Spokane, Washington. The invention used a number of electronically charged parallel wires. In 1923, Jack Colby was born. An American electrical engineer, he invented the first integrated circuit, for which he shared the 2000 Nobel Prize in Physics. And in 1974, London's famous flower and vegetable market moved from Covent Gardens. And that's this day in agricultural history.
WILL programming is made possible by your local DuPont Pioneer team, committed to providing the products and agronomic insights farmers need to achieve success, investing in innovative traits and technologies to meet the needs of a growing population. Pioneer, with you from the word go. Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. A rainy day in my part of the world. However, I think farmers Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, probably appreciate a little rainfall. It's been dry, and once they get the soil temperatures down enough, and this will help, they'll start to apply anhydrous ammonia, and that'll make that knife track close up nice and tight and help things stay good for the winter months. How soon will we really begin to change the weather so the temps can drop?
Well, we are going to see, after the rain showers move out today, we are going to see a couple of days where there won't be much going on. But there is a cold front that'll be coming through the Great Lakes. It'll be moving into the Corn Belt Friday afternoon into Saturday. And it's a dry cold front, meaning cool, dry air coming out of south-central Canada out of this. So there's going to be a drop in temperature this weekend. It's not going to last very long. Temperatures then go right back up again by late in the weekend and early next week. But it will be noticeably cooler, especially in the Friday through Sunday time frame. Plan on that. But then it's going to be several more days where temperatures are likely going to be averaging above normal. We are seeing long-term, finally, some changing weather conditions that will translate to changing weather across the U.S., especially in our part of the world by Thanksgiving week or a little before then.
Turn your attention then to South America very quickly for me. Argentine farmers are really kind of running pretty close to on time with their planting season, though it was wet to begin with. Should they continue to be able to get that crop into the ground pretty easily?
Well, they should, although I think there's going to be some areas in Argentina that may have some delays. I don't think there'll be long delays, but there is a fairly active system that's going to keep the threat of occasional rain shower, thunderstorm activity over Brazil and Argentina. Now, Brazil looks a lot more wet. I think the Brazilian growing areas will see more rain, but in Argentina, some shower activity will be around, but I don't think it'll be enough to slow anybody down too much.
Hey, Don, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Dayes with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can hear him again on our website on demand anytime you'd like. The address is WILLAG.org. In fact, you'll find most, if not all, of our agricultural programming there not long after it airs on our radio stations, and in the case of Commodity Week, even before it ever airs. Speaking of which, Commodity Week will be recorded in Kansas City this week at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Hopefully I'll have it up on the website by about 5 o'clock. Matt Bennett will be there of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Mike Zuzlow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And from Kansas City, Kevin Van Trump will join us as well. And they'll be all right there at the NAFB convention in Kansas City. So it should be a really good program. Check it out if you can.